originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Jude Feld.
Good evening, everyone. Wherever you may be, Trainer Talk is on the air. Tonight's broadcast, sponsored by Fasig Tipton, is the show trainers listen to. This is Jude Feld, and I'm very pleased to spend the next hour with you and our very special guest. Tonight's trainer is in the Hall of Fame. He's won over 2,000 races and finished in the money nearly 5,800 times, while banking $110 million in purses. He's won every Triple Crown race at least once. But as they say in New York, forget about it. Saratoga opens Friday, and when you think of quintessential New York trainers, the one who always comes to mind is Nick Zito. Hey, Nick, welcome to Trainer Talk.
Thanks, Jude. You're the best. And by the way, where did that $110 million go in purses? Could you let me know? Where is it?
Yeah, I don't know. you're not the first trainer to ask that question. Mark Hennig asked me that, too.
Yeah, well, I think what happens is, you know, it's funny, but you do it so long, and then, you know, you got so many ups and downs in the game. And, you know, but thank you. I appreciate it. Now, the game's been good, obviously, to me, and I'm going to keep doing it. And it's a great sport, as you know.
Yeah, it's a fantastic game, and you love it. I love it. There's a lot of people that have embraced it as a lifestyle, and I can't imagine my life without horses, and it really makes a huge difference. And you've been such a great example to people on how to conduct your business and work hard, and good things come to people that work hard, and you've certainly done that.
Thanks, dude. That's really nice of you.
When was the first time you went to Saratoga?
Wow. I'll tell you, you're going way back. It was interesting because they used to have, few of the guys remember, they used to have this truck, Moe's truck, I think it was, Moe's trucks, and they would, you know, sell coffee and stuff, and they'd come through the barn area and whatever it was way back when. And I remember this girl, Toy, her name was, and I never, you know, it was only 24 days at the time, and, you know, Saratoga was really a just small town with, you know, the races were whatever, and I would always say to her, well, I'd be glad to get out of here, go back to Belmont. Did I ever think, you know, so many years later, that I'd be preaching the gospel, how this is the greatest place on earth. and it was interesting. So I go way back. I mean, I'm going to say it's early 70s, I actually came. I might have even been earlier than that, if you can believe it. But, rubbing horses. And then I had a couple of horses I started out with. You know, it's funny. I started out with like one horse and then two, then four, then eight, and 12. But that was way back when. And I can tell you one thing. I've seen the changes firsthand here. And it's very unusual because, you know, for me, we were one of the first trainers, dude, to speak openly about how they should extend the meet. I remember the old timers used to, they give me a hard time. Now I'm an old timer, but they used to give me a hard time saying, you know, what do you mean extend the meet? Like, you know, are you kidding me? Isn't that, you know, this? Because they only wanted that 24 day, whatever it was, and to them that was, you know, that was it. But Saratoga has, and I always call it the last remaining truth. in racing. And if you took, and I say it all the time now, it's getting boring, but people ask me, so I'll say it again, but, you know, you took Saratoga, you took Del Mar, I guess, and, of course, Keeneland, and you put those three in the bottle, and there's so many beautiful racetracks. Belmont's great, and, you know, Churchill, there's so many of them. But if you took those three, you could probably market racing in a big way, especially. And, you know, that's what that is. And Saratoga has just taken the lead, I think, as far as never, ever losing its deal. Never. And with all the... Now, maybe the town, you know, kind of looks like Park Avenue at some places, you know what I mean, which is highly unusual when you go to, you know, when you look at Saratoga all around, but there's so many places that they have just, you know, I mean, you look at the Delphi Hotel, you know, that's like a five-star hotel right in the middle of the town now. And, you know, it's really for the better. But racing itself at Saratoga is just the best, just the best.
Yeah, it's quite a place, and I didn't start going to Saratoga till late in my life because I was a Del Mar guy, and of course Del Mar, very similar in the fact that Del Mar used to be a sleepy town, and you used to be able to buy a house down there for about $25,000 right on the beach, and now you need like $25 million, so it's a whole different kettle of fish, you know, talk about that. You were there, like the lore and the mystique of Saratoga that everybody enjoys today. You were actually there when it was forming. I mean, you know, you go from the 24 days to now like 46 or 48 or whatever it is. But I mean, you were there as this was all happening.
Oh, forget it. I was there. I'll give you. It's funny because. I'm not too proud of this, but today it's acceptable, but you'll love this thing. So my first stakes win in Saratoga, I believe, you got to look it up, was 1981. Meonesian had won the Sanford.
That's true.
1981. So I got a pair of pants, a sport jacket. I got no tie, so I'm going down the box, you know, with rooting and you know, cheering and this and that. And Elliot Birch says to me, the great Elliot Birch, you know, he trained Sword Dancer and so many other great horses, Keaton, the man, so many. And he said, do you want to borrow my tie? So, you know, I mean, all that. And then naturally, I start wearing a tie, if you know what I mean, every day to go to races.
Right.
But the interesting thing is, I've seen all that, you know, the romance, the ambiance, the incredible stables. And now it's a whole different thing. You know, we got incredible stables, but they're owned by four guys, if you know what I mean.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's a very interesting thing. I mean, thank God for Mr. Kelly, with Cat you met. And a few, Mrs. Weber, and actually my woman from Texas likes to stand alone. But at the end of the day, it's still an incredible place. But the changes are different. But back then, that was like, you know, the actors were here and, you know, the celebrities. And thank God for Mary Lou, because she brought the Today Show up here. People don't know that. And that's when this thing started to catch on, let's say. Because, you know, the Whitneys, they would have, you know, Fred Astaire and people like that. You know, Hollywood moguls would come here, and they'd all love it. And just like your place, Del Mar and stuff like that, Bing Crosby. But she opened up the door as far as everybody started recognizing. And lo and behold, I mean, it just took off into the moon, Saratoga. I mean, it just took off into the moon.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing, the transformation. In case you're joining us late, this is Jude Felt, and you're listening to Trainer Talk with Nick Zito. You know, like most of us, you started out as a hot walker and worked your way up the ladder. And unlike most of us, you ended up in the Hall of Fame. Who were some of the trainers that you looked up to and studied back in those days?
Oh, boy. Well, let me tell you, you'll love this. As a teenager, I looked at a fellow named Kurtz Jacobs. As I got later in my teens, everyone always looked up to the chief, Alan Jerkins, which everybody always did. But then I looked up to someone like Frank Whiteley, who, you know, trained Ruffian, and so many great trainers. I would try to just see what they did and kind of emulate the way they did things. And those were probably Alan Jerkins, Frank Whiteley. John Nayrud, he was in there, but I would say, obviously that's not too shabby, John Nayrud, right?
No.
but I would say the chief, Alan Jerkins, Frank Whiteley, probably guys that I looked up to the way they trained horses. There's so many. I mean, there's so many great, great trainers. You know, they were unbelievable. They were really, I hate to use the term, and I hope, people don't, like I said, I'm not ancient, compared to my friend Wayne, I guess I'm a teenager. I'm a teenager compared to him. He's got like 13 years on me or something. But at the end of the day, I would say those were true horsemen. And I don't take anything away from the trainers today. And I think that there is a distinction, between a trainer and a horseman. And today's trainers, first of all, I don't think you could be a horseman if you're training 900 horses, if you know what I mean. You'd have to be some kind of manager, and believe me, those guys that have all those horses, they do an unbelievable job because, dude, I could, I would say for me, I have a certain amount, a limit, just like you would if you were training. It's the same thing. I think we went when I was rolling, let's say, I think the most we had was 90, if you could believe it. The most. And I'm talking about, being in the Triple Crown races every year, a long period of time and winning the right races. So that's the most we ever had. But these guys do a job that's beyond belief. And, their management skills are beyond belief because you see that they run horses and different tracks and have divisions and, they come together. It's unbelievable. But Frank Whiteley, plus Chief Alan Jerkins, I guess, and there's so many, I'm sure I'm leaving some out, but those are, Eddie Nilo was great. There's so many of the trainers that were great that, but those two guys, I think for me, and even though I never worked for neither one of them, would you believe it? Never worked for neither one of them.
Wow.
But I picked their brains. For years, I picked both their brains. Sid Waters was another guy. I'd pick his brain. And by the way, those guys I mentioned, of course, I worked for Leroy Ray, may he rest his soul in peace. He was in the Hall of Fame. So a lot of guys I worked for, John Campbell when I came around, I was a groom. He was good. He worked with Leroy when he first came around. And but those guys are a Hall of Famers, guys I just mentioned.
Yeah,
they're all in the Hall of Fame. In the Hall of Fame, but they were true horsemen, and they could do the things that they did with horses. I think were spectacular, and some of the things you can't even pinpoint. But their careers, if you picked each one out, there were so many special things they did. And, I've been blessed to be here. And then I tell you one thing, the great state of Kentucky helped me in my career. And I watched a lot of horsemen then, too, that were in Kentucky. A lot of great horsemen there, and they're really good at what they do. And you watch that, too. But I've been lucky. But for being in New York and when those guys, were trained here, and I'd have to run against them more later on when I got the better horses, I'd love picking their brains and it was a great experience.
You and I have talked privately about trainers then and now and the differences. Yeah. And when you have a smaller stable and you're more hands-on, you can see subtle changes in a horse that you may miss if you've got, three divisions and 100 horses in each one. Talk about that and the old guys and how they used to go about things and those little the coat or the the chief, he was the best at making little changes that made a huge difference to horses. Right. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, if you look at, like, with Alan, he would do things that, you know, obviously, he'd almost be like, one time we had a conversation, it was interesting, most people should do this, too. They would say, let's say you had a horse, he's in your barn, he's in your barn for a while. Maybe you should pretend that you just got this horse and maybe do things that you would do. So naturally, if he's in your barn and the horse isn't doing well, you have to change something. So that's what he would do, which I thought that made sense.
Yeah.
In other words, you ever notice when a horse goes to a different barn, sometimes they change automatically. And everybody thinks, oh, this trainer, you know why? Well, sometimes, believe it or not, the different environment, you're a product of your environment, you know. And I think what happens is that a lot of times the horse goes to a different place, different environment. They spin him around different. They feed him different. They train him different. And they move up. So I think that was one of the things that I appreciated, you know, that he did. Frank Whiteley, on the other hand, if you liked fishing and you went by his barn, you could fish there because he'd have that hose out and there'd be a freaking river out there. You know what I mean? One time, I remember with Fogo, I went by, it was funny as hell. He liked me, so I was lucky to talk to him, pick his brain. But he had Fogo out there and he'd hose him, and it was like a river. It was like, you know, like you'd go fishing out there where you have
Yeah, some so trainers, they love that hose.
Yeah, he was great. You know, they're just, and those kind of things. But now today, I think with, you know, the trainers today, they have so many horses. They have to manage them. You know, they breeze, you know. Some guys got 28 horses in a barn. They got 28 going out in a set, if you know what I mean.
Right, right.
And they also think about the days that they breed. You know, I think, you know, it's amazing. And I've seen them breed 50 horses one day. Most people don't have 50 horses. It's an interesting concept today. But listen, I always said this, and I hope, dude, that the game, you know, the game's bigger than everyone, and I hope it survives, you know, at the top, you know, of its class. And I hope, you know, racing stays high up there that way, because the game's bigger than everyone, and the game will always survive. It's just, you know, how or what or whatever. And there's so many. I don't like to get into the politics of it, because, you know, you could be here forever talking about it. Right, Amo?
Yeah. Well, you know, it has changed quite a bit, and you know, places like Saratoga and Del Mar, they're tracks that have changed tremendously in a relatively short period of time. I mean, Saratoga's been around for way longer than Del Mar, but you know, the town, it used to be like a sleepy little place, and you know, not just a couple of businesses, not that big of a deal. And now it's a thriving metropolis almost. I mean, it still has small town feel, but I mean, the place is just, you know, bustling all the time, especially during the race meet. What was it like back in those days? Like when you'd go downtown, what did you guys do for entertainment?
Well, you know, at one time, you know, Sperry's is still there, but Sperry's was really the spot to go to. And I remember Mike Francesa from The Fan said, oh, you want to find Nick? This is in the 90s, early 90s, because it started to just, you know, get a little bit the way it's getting now, but there wasn't anything like it is now. And, you know, we'd go there all the time, and that was good. And, of course, you know, the Wishing Well is still there. Those are like stalwart places. But now you got like so many of these different places, and they got so many condos and fancy, you know, places people to live and people to invest in, and the homes. You know, I had an owner, may rest in peace. You remember Joe Kanasha that had Gopher Jan and Strike the Gold and
yeah.
a piece of Mr. Greeley? Yep. You remember him?
Yeah, absolutely.
So he had this house. He bought this house, and you know, you walk to the barn. It's right on Oklahoma. Matter of fact, I'm looking at it now. Believe me, he would have had to fix his home or they would have kicked him out now. Every one of those homes is restructured into a model home, if you know what I mean. And it's right where they could see the horses at the back of Oklahoma. And you look at every one of those homes, they're spectacular. They're spectacular. And I remember that, you know, they weren't much to look at, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And now that shows you, you know, basically what the town has, you know, and, but racing has endured into another level. I mean, and, you know, what Chris Kay is doing, I don't know, I guess he's taking a model of where at the top of the stretch, you know, you've got the new boxes where they used to be just regular seats, and they're really nice. And he's taking that model. I wouldn't be surprised. That's at the top of the stretch. I wouldn't be surprised next year if you have that past the wire. You know, kind of like a Churchill Downs model. You know
right.
When we went to the Derby, you used to have the – I remember, you know, the first Derbies I went, you had little seats there.
Right.
Now it's all luxury things and things like that. So racing, you know, obviously racing itself has whatever. And Saratoga's, you know, they might have, you know, but obviously, listen, I think they sold them all, so they must know what they're doing. And it's, you know, good for the game. So, you know, I hope so. I mean, that's for sure.
Well, that's right. A way a lot of sporting events are going to the corporate boxes and that type of thing. And,
right.
You know, but do you think there's any danger that they kind of price people out of business? Like people won't be able to go to the races?
That's why I love you and Mike. You tell the truth. They always do. I mean, that is a danger. I hope not, but that always is. You still got to think of mom and pop, you know. In my opinion, you know, sometimes you need to get feedback from them. But obviously, you know, they have customers that will be willing to do that. But you still need to take care of mom and pop. So hopefully they're doing both. But there's always a danger. I agree. I mean, look at that. Yeah, and especially, you know, but see that the one thing they do have going for them in both places we talked about, our place and then where, you know, obviously where you were at Del Mar, it's a great place. It sells itself. You don't have to worry, if you know what I'm saying.
Right.
You couldn't do that anywhere else. Try doing that, excuse me, no expression. I mean, no hard feelings. Try doing that at Belmont. I don't think so. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, you know, at the end of the day, or somewhere else, like you said, or you know, but you could certainly do it here. That's for sure.
Yeah.
You could certainly do it here.
Well, you know, I always think about like the kids that want to go racing. And I know I read an article when I was prepping for the show that when you were young, your dad used to take you to the track, but you couldn't get in. You used to hang out with a security guard on the backside because you couldn't go to the grandstand.
Right.
And I can't think of anything worse, because one of the things that I loved when I was a kid was going to Santa Anita and hanging out in the paddock and watching, you know, the trainers saddle the horses. And I used to keep track of who wore bandages and who had a tongue tie. I knew more about what the horses were wearing than the paddock judge.
But well, you loved it. You ate, slept, and drank it, and that's why.
Yeah.
But the sport, you know. Look, you know, there's so many different chains. I mean, listen, I remember Saratoga, which wasn't that long ago, where we used to saddle under the trees. We never went inside. You know, it was all open.
Right.
I don't know. No one got really seriously hurt, but we used to do that. And you know, so many different aspects. But you'd have to go back in time, and that's where we're in the 21st century now, so a lot of those things have changed. And you used the word before correctly, so corporate, you're into a corporate deal right now. And but believe me, you know, the one thing that never gets stale, no matter what they do, it's I got to tell you something. You mentioned the Hall of Fame. Someone mentioned this to me the other day. And I was grateful that he did, and I'm glad we had this conversation. This is the second time I used this line, since 2005. So when I got in the Hall of Fame, I remember in my speech, I said, remember, the forefathers were right on the money with Saratoga. This place wasn't built up with a feather. It was built on a rock. It wasn't built with a feather. And someone reminded me what I said. That was a long time ago, obviously, 2005. Not a long time, but 12, 18 years. And it doesn't matter, you know, what they do to Saratoga, you know, how, you know, corporate boxes or this or that or whatever. It was built on a rock, so it ain't going anywhere. Your track was built on a rock. It's not going anywhere, some of these tracks. So, you know, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But you know, that's really, really, I hope your audience, you know, realizes the kind of host they got, because most people, you know, they're not looking out for, you know, the average Joe. They're not. And you are, and that's why you make a great team. You do a good job on that. Horse Racing Network, right?
Horse Racing Radio Network.
Horse Racing Radio Network, okay.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for the kind words. You know, we always try to be inclusive with everyone, and Mike and I both love this game, as you well know, and as you love it too. And so we want it to further, and you know, it's really something that we strive for. We want people to enjoy themselves when they go to the track and appreciate the horses. And so that's one of the things that I've learned doing this show is it's all about the horses, right? It really doesn't matter about the buildings or all of that. It's all about the horses. The people want to see the horses.
Yeah. You know what? An old timer told me, the fellow that had Runaway Groom, he beat, Runaway Groom in the Travers. This fellow, John DeMarlo, taught me this. I guess it was 1982. Or one, Jeffrey Feld. Remember when he beat the horse that won the Derby, horse that won the Preakness, horse that won the Belmont? He won that Travers Runaway Groom. Did you know that?
I remember him, yeah.
He tied Cherokee Run and walk passes by Cherokee Run. So that was pretty important to me that time when we won the Breeders' Cup. But he said to me, yeah, if you look up the 1981 Travers, Runaway Groom beat all three horses that ran in the Triple Crown. You got to look it up. But anyway, John told me, when you just said it's all about the horses, remember?
Right.
You just said that. And he said, remember, and he pointed to his two fingers, his finger and his thumb, and he said, we're just this big in this game. It's the horses that are so important. That's true. That's true. The horses are the star of the show.
Absolutely.
It's all about the horses. You're right.
Well, we've got to take a break, and we'll come back and continue this discussion with Trainer Nick Zito. You're listening to Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
On November 4th, let your stars shine their brightest under the Fasig Tipton November Sale Spotlight. Poised to attract the bids of the world's leading buyers, no other sale packs as much thrill and excitement into one single session. The November sale was stronger than ever in 2017 with record gains as sellers realized top prices for their prized fillies, broodmares, and weanlings. Nominate now the Fasig Tipton November Sale, November 4th in Lexington, Kentucky. Learn more at FasigNovember.com.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win, going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizu with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at BloomRacing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best, to breed the best, to race the best.
Super Saver Russell Meyer, what a finish in the class.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm, dedicated to the dream.
Kentucky Downs is home to five outstanding days of racing beginning September 1st, highlighted by 14 stakes races, four graded stakes, and a record $10 million in purses, with increases to the Calumet Farm Kentucky Turf Cup and the Taurus Mile. The new Kentucky Downs Juvenile Turf Sprint will serve as a stepping stone to the new Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint, and all Kentucky Breds race for $130,000 in maiden events and $145,000 in allowance races. Kentucky Downs, beginning September 1st. I'm here with Dr. Jim Chiappetta of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Jim, will the strips make my horse go faster?
The reality is, there's nothing out there that's going to turn a $10,000 claimer into a graded stakes winner. But what we should think about, NASCAR figured out long ago, incremental improvements collectively provide improved performance. That's one area where a Flair strip can help. They're part of the toolkit that many trainers use to make marginal gains for overall improvement in health and performance.
Learn more at flairstrips.com/learn.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
As the field turns for home, Lionheart has come up empty. Birdstone up for the lead. Birdstone in front. Purge is battling with him on the outside, the cliff's edge. Eddington is fourth at the rail. Birdstone at the eighth pole with the lead. The cliff's edge takes it to him. Zeno 1-2 with the 16th to go. And little Birdstone digs down. The cliff's edge could not get to him in the darkness at Saratoga. Birdstone has won the 135th Belmont Stakes. His stablemate, the Cliff's Edge, was second. Eddington was third, and Purge was fourth.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. This is Jude Feld with our special guest, Hall of Fame trainer Nick Zito. I want to remind everybody that if you missed any portion of this show, it will be archived on our website, horseracingradio.net, and is also available at Horse Racing Radio on iTunes. Nick, the 2004 Travers, was that like a bucket list victory for you?
Oh, yeah. By the way, I don't know if you know, there's a trivia to that. That's the only horse in history. Forget the lightning storm, and they were going to cancel, and it was the most magical thing. Did you hear Tom Durkin's call? That's the only horse in history that won the Belmont and the Travers in the same day.
Oh, yeah.
He got so excited, he said, and Birdstone wins the Belmont because he had just beaten Smarty Jones in the Triple Crown. I never ran him in a prep race. After Belmont, I ran him out of the Travers. So it was an honest mistake, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he wasn't too pleased with it, but it was funny you mentioned that because when I was doing the research for the show and I decided that was going to be the clip to come back with because it was such an important race for you and you know, at Saratoga, and he said the Belmont, and I go, did I pull up the wrong clip? And I had to go back and and play it again to figure out that it was just something that Tom did, but... Man, what a great race, and it was in the dark, and you ran 1-2. I mean, fantastic, huh?
Yeah, that was a bucket list. And the other thing was, too, the reason it was a bucket list, it was you saw the atmosphere. And to Barry Swartz's credit, they were thinking of sealing the track. And Barry said, no, we're going to go with no sealed track. And lo and behold, it came down as they ran, as you know. And it was dark. I mean, it was like lightning, thunder, dark, whatever. And we got the Travers race home free. And that was great. And thank God, he was chairman at the time. And thank God they didn't seal that track. Because who knows what the outcome would have been. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was a nice, hollow track. So I was very grateful to the Naira management, that they did that.
Yeah, well,
you know what, Jude? I think they might have canceled the last race was so bad. You might have to look that up.
Yeah.
I think they might have. You know that?
Right. It was really dark. If our listeners have a chance to go back and watch that race, you know, you can Google it and pull it up. I mean, it was really dark, and every flash bulb and every car light, I mean, the lighting around the track as the race was going on was really kind of bizarre. It was interesting to watch all of that. So
somebody compared that to, remember the Natural with Robert Redford when he hit the
hit the home run, yeah. Yeah,
and lightning came with the lights and everything. They compared it to that, which that's why I say, no, I'm very blessed. And you know, look, John and Mary Lou, you know, Mary Lou, I've had a relationship with her of over 40 years. John, you know, obviously 25, I guess. And it was so good to win it for them. It was so good to win it for them.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Look, I'm going to check in. You know, with Robert McKenna's horse. But thank God, you know, 2 years later, I won a Breeders' Cup for him. I won a Belmont for him, too. So that was good. You know, I had two Florida Derbies in a row. So even though he was second that day, I think I made it up to him. Anyway.
Well, that had to be so cool, too, to win for Mrs. Whitney. I mean, geez, she means so much to Saratoga, right? She's a huge part of what Saratoga is today.
I told you, you know, she brought the Today Show up there. You couldn't do more than that, right? I mean, she's done so much, and the charity that she does and all the other stuff they do, and it's amazing. And you know, she's with us, which is great, and it's amazing, and they keep going, and they keep doing the things that you're supposed to do, and they've done so much. And Saratoga, look, it's, you know, let me say this about Saratoga. I don't know about Del Mar now, off season. Do you know this place, May to like October, it's busy? You wouldn't believe it. The community.
Uh-huh.
It's busy from me. It used to be, you know, everybody wait, but they still say what they call track season. That's just, you know, that's their logo. I mean, that's their slogan when you talk to the, you know, locals, track season. But they still do business all year round, and you know, yeah, the winters are frightening cold. But boy, I tell you, once they get a little break with the weather, it's unbelievable. I mean, between Skidmore and all the things they got going on, and believe me, you know, I'm not running for mayor at Saratoga, but I guess I could. But the thing about it is they do have a special place now, and the community has a special place. Besides the racing, that's what I'm trying to say.
Right.
And, of course, the racing is where they make all their money. Let's face it.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, not all their money, but a lot of it comes, you know, from that couple of months they're here. So it is a special place, and it is special. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of race. I tell you, you know, one thing you talk about racing, and, you know, is the horses are the main thing. You know, I will say this. I had a couple of tough beats in the Travers. I don't know if you're aware of that. I'll tell you a few of them. So, let's see. Bellamy Road. Well, let's go Albert the Great. Albert the Great in the 2000 Travers, I believe. You look it up. He was in front. It was the longest race of my career. You say, what do you mean it's the longest race of your career? He was in front from the half-mile pole all the way to the last jump. All the way to the last jump. All the way to the last jump. So that was that was like one of the toughest beats ever. Shane Sellers rode a horse to Carl Nasker, and he dropped his head. And it was the last jump. He dropped his head. Boom. We were in front. He was a winner all the way from the half-mile pole. And I ran a horse for Mr. Steinbrenner. George and I became great friends. May rest in peace, George Steinbrenner. 2005, called Bellamy Road. Looked like we were going to win that one. And then in 2010, we lost a race with Fly Down. In the grandstand, Jude, the horse won in the clubhouse he lost. It sounds weird, but the picture, in other words, if you're watching on television in the grandstand, you would have thought we won. If you watched it in the clubhouse, you would have thought it should have been a dead heat, but it was a whisker.
Hmm.
And talk about the Chiefs. I run into him in a restaurant. I want to show the type of guy Alan Jerkins was. So I run into him in the restaurant that night. And he goes, "Oh, Nick." He goes, "I wish it was a dead heat." And who trained the horse? His son, Jimmy Jerkins, the one that beat us at Fleet Express. And then, of course, you know, first on the, you know, in 2004, that we got it done, and Louis Couture was second. I've had a lot of seconds in there, but you're right. The bucket list was definitely Little Birdstone in the lightning storm and whatever. But there were some memorable Travis for me up here too, so that was good. But you know what? But Jude, I want to tell you one thing. That hopefully, when I do a show with you one of these years, we'll be talking about our new Travis win.
That's right.
You know, and I'll become Tony Bennett in racing, if you know what I mean. I'll make a comeback. But anyway.
There you go.
So yeah. I hope I gave you enough time. I hope it's all right.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's good. You did something else that I think is a fantastic feat. You won the Whitney in 2005 with commentator and then came back and won it in 2008. Your man, Wayne Lucas, he would say that's a tribute to your program. First of all, keeping a horse, you know, sound and raceable that long. And did you think that was pretty cool to do that like that?
Yeah. And actually, you know what? I think in 2010, he almost won it again. And now he would have marched. He still may get into the Hall of Fame. Who knows? But he would have marched into the Hall of Fame if he had won three Whitneys. No. Yeah. Thank you for saying that because, that goes with, you hear trainers say, you know, a lot today. It's your health, it's your staff, it's your program. Absolutely right. But that was a credit to everyone that was working for me at the time. And that was a credit. And Tracy Farm was the owner. And Carol, and you know, that's where I think ownership comes in. That's where an owner who's good, that knows, needs time, give him the time. Needs time, give him the time. And that's where I think the owner has a lot to say about something like that. Because most people, you know, they're not going to run 8-year-olds. You know what I mean? Am I right or wrong?
Right.
7-year-olds. And they're not going to do it. I mean, that's just the way it is. And, you know, to win the Whitney in 2005 and to let him come back, you know, 3 years later, you had to endure, you know, the words, you had to have patience and the resolve, and they did. You know, the farmers did that. So that was pretty good. That's a credit to them.
Yeah, and then you say two years later to almost win it again. So were those the only three times he participated, or did he run in any other Whitneys?
No, I think that was it. I think if you look it up, I'm pretty sure that was it. Mm. Yeah, the Whitney. Well, Whitney's a special race, too. You know, Whitney and Travers, I think, listen. I would put it this way. I've been blessed. You say, what do you mean? Well, we won the Jim Dandy, we won the Travis, and we won the Whitney. That's pretty freaking good. I'm right along.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Yeah, fantastic. Most people could only dream about doing that.
Right. So that's pretty good. So, you know, for me, I'm blessed. I'm glad I could talk to you about it, too. And, you know, when you got the horse racing network on your side, you're doing pretty good.
Well, you're always great with your time, and you never tell us no. We really appreciate what you do for us and for the sport.
You guys do a fantastic job, and thanks for thinking about the mom and pops of the world. That's very courageous of you today, and that's nice. But I think, you know, looking at this, and I think you know me, unfortunately, sometimes, you know, you see what you get, like they say, or whatever it is, you know, whatever you see, this is what you get. But I think, you know, some of the racing bodies today realize that, you know what, it's good that they got guys like you, and they got a show like you, and they could coincide with their management skills and promote the sport. And that's what you got to keep doing. That's one of the things that I'm proud of. I think I keep promoting our sport, and I'll do it forever. And I think that's the key. You know, if you love a sport, baseball, football, basketball, you got to put your heart and soul into it no matter what, good times, bad times, in-between times, and that's what we try to do. So, you know, I appreciate it, and, you know, hopefully we'll talk again.
You know, you never want people to forget about horse racing. And I know, you know, like the MLB, I have the MLB package. I watch a lot of baseball but they send you an email, like, you know, like at least once a week, sometimes twice, so that you don't forget about baseball. We don't do that in horse racing. I'm not a big fan of, like, you know, pounding people's inboxes with spam. but you know, when I work for Keeneland in the publicity department, I always tried to keep horse racing in people's minds, whether it was like running a handicapping contest during the off season or whatever, just so they don't forget about horse racing. Yeah. And they can maybe they see a horse and they follow it and they come back and watch them run at Keeneland, or they learn about a trainer or a jockey or whoever it is, you know, important, and it's important to keep it, you know, in the mind's eye. And, you know, we have people, you know, that like to do that, like the you know, Mike that runs Embrace the Race up there in Saratoga. That's his thing, is, you know, wear what you love, and he's got his logo with the horse on it, and starting conversations, whether you're in a restaurant or a bar, somebody sees you wearing that shirt and they say, hey, you know, yeah, do you like horse racing? You know, and it just starts a conversation. And I realize, you know, you can't go around and say, hello, I'm Nick Zito, Hall of Fame trainer.
Well, you know, that's right. But you know what? You mentioned Major League Baseball, MLB. You know, one of the things that happened to me 2 days before the Belmont Stakes, I was on with Mad Dog Radio with Chris Russo, and he's not a horse racing fan. And he said, quote unquote, he goes, boy, that's why I love to have Nicky on. He calls me Nicky. He said, because, you know, he makes racing fun. He said, I'm not even a racing fan, but he said he makes racing fun. And that was like a big compliment to me.
Absolutely.
If you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I invited him to come to Saratoga. And I said, he's been to Saratoga, but not to the races. And I said, look, you got to come. So you're right. We keep talking about it. And that's how you get it across. That's exactly right. And thank you for what you guys do.
Well, it's always, you know, when you have the passion like you do, and it's easy to talk about the horses. You know, sometimes people say to me, don't you get sick about talking about horses all the time? And I go, not really, you know, because I want people to be involved. I want people to have that same feeling that I get when I go to the races, or when I'm involved in the sport, and I want to share that with people.
Absolutely. 100% right. You're right on the money. And what's your next stop? You come to Saratoga?
Yeah, we're coming up to Saratoga. We'll be there for the sale weekend. We're going to do the races on Saturday. We're going to do the Phasic Tipton sale live both nights. We've been doing that for the past few years. It's been very successful. People love to feel like they're in the action there at the sale. And then, of course, we'll be up there for the Travers. But we've got shows going every weekend. Anthony Stabile will be up there a lot, and so you'll get to see us. We'll be in and out.
Great.
I noticed on your website, on the ZitoRacing.com website, there's a little note. And it says, just as important as on-track success, Nick and his wife Kim have long been advocates for horse safety and aftercare. Please consider visiting and supporting organizations such as NTRA Aftercare, Rerun, and Saratoga War Horse. Talk about that a little bit and how important that is to you and your wife.
Well, she's been doing this forever. And my mentor, John Hedinger, he changed his whole life on that. May he rest in peace. He was responsible for bringing Fassy Tipton back. You could ask Boyd Browning, I'll tell you. When the company was having tough times, he just put his name, his money, his time, his is everything on the line and made that company strong again. And that was his whole life. And he's the one that taught me that. And, of course, when I met Kim many moons ago, Mike knows Kim, you know, 20-some years ago, that's what she did. And it was easy for me to adopt it between the two of them. And at one time, you'll love this, I was the president of the Horse Slaughter Association Against Horse Slaughter in America. And the vice president was Bo Derek. She was in the California side. I was on the east side. Well, and then I think she became the president of the only. That was easy to pick Bo over me. but any case, and she's another one that does these great things on your coast, you know, on the West Coast. I say your coast because I know the West Coast. And but then, no, we listen, you said it best. It's all about the horse. That's what we always want to do. We don't want to do anything. We never want to forget that. We want to make sure that, you know, the horse comes first. And when they leave this, you know, racing and wherever it is, and the ones that can't make it or whatever, that they just get a good home. And I know it's tough. I mean, I had this conversation with Dr. Bramlage. I had the conversation with, you know, government officials. I mean, they pay a dollar a day for a pack horse out there. You know, it's really, but the one thing that I will say that the New York Gaming did, which I'm very proud to be associated with, and I got to give them a pat on the back. If you take a license in New York, you have to read that where it says that's a responsibility you got. So don't just buy a horse and just say, well, good luck to you. You know what I mean?
Right.
You got to make sure that, you know, if he's your horse, and that's if he gets claimed, that's somebody else's then responsibility. Or if he gets sold at auction, that's somebody else's responsibility. But while you got him, you got to make sure of it. God forbid something happens, that you can provide something for that horse, which is not dead. And, you know, a lot of these organizations, they give, you know, a write-off, which is 100%, you know, right on the money. You don't have to argue with the government, because if they see that, you know, they know that's a legitimate write-off and the horse was given a rerun or somewhere or a new vocation or wherever I'm leaving out, you know, one of the tops, you know, they're going to be okay. So there's no excuse for them not to look out for a horse.
Yeah, that's so important. And it's really important to take care of these horses. They give us so much and so much pleasure and enjoyment. But it's really expensive. I mean, it's still expensive to take care of a horse, not as much as on the racetrack, but you still got to feed them and care for them and make sure that they have, you know, the farrier come and all of that.
Well, that's why these organizations are good, because let's say it's a, and now, and also for someone out there that's listening, so wait a second, do I have to, you know, this horse goes somewhere to the aftercare and then I have to pay all the time? No, you can give a small donation and that's it. In other words, once he leaves, you can give a small donation, and then they'll take care of him. They put him in good homes, and that's what they do. And you don't even have to do that sometimes. You just have to make sure they go there. So there's a lot of good work being done now. But Kim, I would say, she was one of the first that really, really stuck her neck out and really, you know, tried to help. And there's so many other people that have done that. You know, we're not the only ones. There's so many. But I will say this, John Hettinger, my mentor, you know, he was one of the first ones that did all this, if you know what I mean.
Right, right.
He believed against the horse slaughter. He thought that was despicable, which it is. And it doesn't make any sense, you know?
So, yeah.
I know, but there's, you know, like everything else today, it's, you know, we even have our political end in racing, if you know what I mean.
Right.
A lot of,
it's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
Yeah.
It's everywhere, but that's okay.
We talked a minute about Myonesian, your first stakes winner. Do you remember your first winner at Saratoga?
Geez, you know, you'd have to look that up. I don't know why I don't remember my first winner. I should. It was somebody. I mean, I'm trying to think of. Wow. geez, I can't think now, you know, about who was my first winner at Saratoga. I should. I don't know why. I know it was probably in the 70s, early 70s. So, wait a minute. Was it Big Red Devil in 1974, maybe? That could be it. He beat a horse called Branford Court, belonged to none other than Paul Mellon, trained by none other than Elliot Birch. I remember that.
Must have been a pretty good race.
It was a three, it was like a three other than or two other than, and I was had black hair, and I think I was in my late 20s. my early 20s, excuse me.
That was only a couple thousand winters ago.
Yeah, so a few years ago. All right. Hey, you know, Judd, I'm doing this a few years now, if you know what I mean. I've been doing this a few years.
Yeah, yeah.
But, no, I think, like I said, NYRA right now is, they're doing pretty good right now because Saratoga's open, if you know what I mean. I think they get a break here, if you know what I mean. This is a good team, put it that way, Saratoga.
Yeah.
They ain't got to get too many hits. If you know what I mean.
That's right.
Right?
Well,
you know what it is, Saratoga? Saratoga is like the 85 Bears, remember? It's like one of the best teams.
That's great. Well, yeah, thanks for spending the time with us. We really appreciate it. It was great talking to you.
I'm glad we did. Thank you, and thanks.
I'll catch up with you when we get up to the spa.
Please do. I'd like to see you. That'd be great. We always have good conversations, and I like the fact that you did this before, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So that's a big edge you got.
I know from both sides of the fence.
That's what I mean. Yeah, I like that. I like that about you. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, my friend.
All righty.
See you.
Well, that was a lot of fun talking to Nick. Once again, like to thank him for taking the time to hang out with us this evening. He'll be receiving a gift courtesy of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Prevent, protect, perform with Flair Strips. A special thank you to our producer, Lee Della Pina. You've been listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. This is Jude Feld from our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios. Good night, everybody, and best of luck at Saratoga.